about freedom, prosperity, and peace.
Come on, people, gather around him. He's got a message, hope for us all. Young and old folks are standing together, calling for freedom, calling for Ron Paul. Listen up, join each other now. Let's spread the message of freedom. We make a call, shout it out loud. We want the message of freedom. The golden age, truth is upon us. The speaking out, no effort's too small. Ready to fight for our rights and freedom. We're on the same side of Ron Paul. Listen up, join each other now. Let's spread the message of freedom. We make a call, shout it out loud. We want the message of freedom.
I am an advocate, a very strong advocate, of following very strictly rule of law, the Constitution of the United States.
Message with Stephen Vincent. I want to thank Steve Doerr for writing that song for the show. I really appreciate it. If you're listening out there, buddy, thank you so very much. So very inspirational. Really appreciate it. And I know that people out there are just loving your new tune, Message of Freedom. And again, this is the Freedom Message with Stephen Vincent. And the number to call into the show and participate is 877-270-8714, 877-270-8714. I am very much looking forward to getting your call and discussing the political situation in our country, the freedom movement, and Ron Paul with you. So many of you may know that yesterday we were live, a three-hour broadcast from Los Angeles reporting on Ron Paul's visit to the Southland. It was an exciting and beautiful day. I had a great time. It was a lot of work. I was exhausted by the end of the day, but really, really thoroughly enjoyed the day and was completely inspired both by the presence of the supporters at the rally and at the fundraisers, but also by Ron Paul, the man himself. His performance in the day was absolutely unbelievable. A 72-year-old man, I mean, he just kept going throughout the whole day with a smile on his face and had time for everybody and gave everyone his time and his respect and his attention and answered their questions and chatted with anybody who wanted to speak with him. It was thoroughly inspiring. He is the real deal, and when you come in contact with him first hand, up close, and you see that, and you get that from his handshake, and you get that in his eyes, and you get that in his voice, you know, it makes you want to work even harder for this campaign, because you're working for the freedom message that he is propounding. But you're also working for this man. You know, someone who can truly embody the message that he's putting out. And that's something that's rare and special and worthy of our support and our energy and our effort. So it was quite an experience. I have never done a live stream, and there was the added complexity to the whole project that that it was done wirelessly via a wireless network. So there were many complexities. We were basically working out the bugs right up till about 6 minutes before going live, working out all kinds of bugs and issues. I mean, I basically gave myself a 48-hour crash course on how to do a live internet streaming broadcast. And we basically pulled it off fairly well. I mean, there were certainly a few times when we went down, but overall, we got through the 3 hours, and we were able to deliver the program, and it all went off really well. We had help from lots of people, and I want to thank my team that really helped so much, without whom there's no way I could possibly have done it. And then we're going to have the archive of the show edited together for you and available for you soon. And it was just a fantastic experience. So today we're going to share some of Ron Paul's speech with you, and the rest of the material will be available in the archive. But we got pieces of Ron Paul's speech that we're going to share with you, and I will, of course, comment for you, give you a little bit of color on that. But maybe before I go ahead and excuse me. Before I go ahead and tell you, play those clips for you from yesterday's Ron Paul visit in Los Angeles, we'll go and talk about a little bit of news. Again, the number to call into the show, would love to get your call, and especially if you listened in yesterday, wanted to get some feedback on that. I got about a dozen emails from people telling me that the show was great, so I'm assuming things went fairly well. But I'd love to hear from you. And the number to call in again is 877-270-8714, 877-270-8714. So the next debate has been lined up, and this will be in Baltimore on September 27th. Baltimore, September 27th, Republican debate on PBS. And there's lots of reasons to be very optimistic about this debate, because the way that this debate is apparently organized does not lump the so-called first-tier candidates towards the center of the stage and put everyone who's deemed second-tier off to the fringes. It's apparently organized in a much more equitable way, and the way that the questions will be asked will give equal time to the candidates. So I think that we have every reason to be optimistic about the outcome of this debate for our candidate, Ron Paul. And again, that will be September 27th in Baltimore and on PBS. So keep that in mind. There have been a couple of new news articles that have come out recently. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Now, I want to comment that we have seen an increase in the print and electronic media coverage of Ron Paul in the last couple of weeks. There's certainly been a number of major articles that continue to come out every day. And we have two new ones, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And if you do seattlepi.com, I believe you'll be able to find that. And if we have time in the show, I will actually read this for you, because I'll tell you what, I haven't had a chance to read it yet. So I'll read it for you and for myself at the same time. And the same goes for the article in Time magazine called Ron Paul for President 2.0. Ron Paul for President 2.0 in Time magazine, and I was told by others that this is actually a good article. So I'm looking forward to reading it, and I haven't read it yet, so I may very well just read it for you here on the air. What else? Well, I got an email from the campaign about campaign fundraising, and apparently it's going pretty well. They are putting on a big push for the last 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, the quarter ends, and we will be reporting the numbers. Now, for propaganda purposes, so to speak, or I guess the word better word is publicity purposes, it really helps if we have a strong fundraising number, because that sends a message out to the media and the general public that this campaign is serious. And I know that in Los Angeles, we had a target of $100,000, and we exceeded it for the three fundraisers that we put together. So I'm expecting San Francisco, where they're having fundraisers with Ron Paul today, I'm expecting you guys to do the same, exceed your number, and there will be fundraisers in Seattle coming up, I believe, on Friday. And so we expect those numbers to be beat. And by the way, if you happen to be in San Francisco or Seattle and you're in the middle of what's going on there, I would love to get a call from you so that I can, you know, get your report on what's going on in those cities and, you know, sort of amplify the work that you're doing and get it out to people. So please do give me a call, 877-270-8714, 877-270-8714. So we are making a big push to increase campaign financing, and if you've donated to the campaign, see what else you can come up with to help us boost those numbers, end of the quarter numbers, so we can make the maximum impact on the public mind with a really strong fundraising number. And let's see. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, let me just go ahead and go right into the clips on of Ron Paul. Now, the first clip we're going to play, excuse me, it's just a little bit of a warm-up, and you'll hear some crowd noise, and a marching band walks into the plaza as Ron Paul is walking, and marching band, you know, sort of introduces him, walks in ahead of him. And with some fanfare, it's just quite exciting. And so we're going to play a little bit of that. And then we have Ed Griffin speaking, Edward G. Griffin. And I had the opportunity to interview him later in the day. So let's go ahead and roll that first Ron Paul USC clip.
Program Board. the vision of the undergraduate student government. And we'd like to thank Amy Wan, Chris Monteverde Tallarico, and Jeff Hubbard over here. Chris Jeff, for putting together this wonderful event. We're so happy to be here. And we're happy to have so many of you here. So what I'd like to do is introduce Berica May, who will sing the national anthem. After which, we will hear from Ed Griffin, who wrote the book that many of you may know, Preacher from Jekyll Island. So, yeah.
I said, sure, what do you want me to talk about? He said, about 5 minutes. That's hard for me to do. I'm a 90-minute speech guy, as some of you know. So I got to thinking, well, this is the age of the soundbite. So how do I take what I want to say and turn it down into a little soundbite? And I worked on it, and I worked on it, and I came up finally with the whole thing condensed down to 11 words. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to remember this. The only candidate who can win for America is Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Okay, now I've delivered my speech. I'll take maybe 4 minutes and 30 seconds to amplify on that. The reason I think that's an important topic is because as the campaign rolls on, you're going to run into people who will say, oh, I love Ron Paul. I love what he stands for. I like everything about him except one thing. He can't win. Well, I have an idea of how you might deal with such a person. You might ask them, can't win what? Well, the election, of course. And then you follow up rapidly, I hope, you say, well, what's important about winning an election? Why do you want to win an election? Now, that'll stop a lot of people. They haven't thought of beyond that point. They think that winning is somehow it. They don't know what they're winning, but they're winners. You know, they like to be in the football pool and pick the winner. They don't care whether it's Cincinnati, Detroit, or New York, but they don't care. They just want to be on the winning side. And what good does it do to win if you lose your freedom in the process?
Right on.
So, you might ask this person to think it's important to win an election for really only one reason. And that is in anticipation that the candidate that you're voting for will carry your political principles and your ideology into office so you can implement this and affect the nation and preserve that freedom that we just pledged our allegiance to a moment ago.
That's the reason for winning. If you can't win that, then what's the point? Now, it's possible for other candidates out there in the scene to possibly win for the Republican Party, or win for the Democrat Party, or win for the international corporations, or win for the pharmaceutical cartel, or win for the banking cartel, or win for the industrial military complex. But I am now going to introduce to you the only man
who can win for America. And then he introduces
for America.
Okay, hold that there. Pause that there. Quinn, pause that clip.
It's great to see so many out, and I'm delighted that our numbers continue to grow. And, of course, the question I'm always asked every time I'm interviewed by the media is, you can't win. Your polls are so low. But why are you doing so well on the Internet? So the real question is can we translate this phenomenal support for these views that we hold from the Internet into real votes come January?
Okay, why don't you just go ahead and continue it now? All right, we'll just continue listening to the end of this clip then.
Sorry, what do you think? Why are we getting the support, especially among young people? What is it that they're attracted to? And it can't be me by myself. I know that can't be it. But it just may be that the cause of liberty is what we're interested in. The assumption that more than 100 years ago, by some manner or other, the concept of liberty got chopped into pieces. Some portions were defended by one group, and that was economic liberty. And then another group said, no, there's personal liberty too, and they started defending personal liberty. And then another group started talking about a pro-American foreign policy where we minded our own business and took care of ourselves and provided a strong national defense. And others said we had to police the world. So it all got chopped up. So my suggestion, and the suggestion that we hold, is why don't we put it back together and understand the concept of liberty, which was made America great. Because it doesn't take a whole lot of talent to figure out that in America it was meant that we as individuals should be left alone to our own bidding as long as we don't hurt people. Just stay out of our lives and let us be. The government was never expected to tell us what we were supposed to put into our minds or put into our soul or put into our bodies. It was never intended by our Constitution that the government should run the economy. Let me assure you, the people I've met in Washington, whether they're the bureaucrats or the politicians, they're not smart enough to run the economy. Run the economy means that they want to run your financial life, that they have a right to your finances totally and completely. This is the concept built on the personal income tax. The assumption is made that the government owns 100% of the fruits of your labor, and they will give you permission to keep a certain percentage. So whether it's 1% or 99% taxation, the principle is wrong, and that's why we have to get rid of the income tax and repeal the 16th Amendment. The other half
half of that is we assume responsibility for ourselves. If we're left alone and allowed to keep the fruits of our labor, we can take better care of ourselves than the government could ever pretend to. The government would regulate our personal lives, our personal privacy. And yet today, in this post 9/11 atmosphere, we have sacrificed way too much. There has been a systematic attack on personal liberty for the last 6 years. We need to reverse that. We need to repeal laws like the Patriot Act and make sure we never get a national ID. Yes, we need that identifier, because if we don't have that identifier for all Americans, we won't know who's illegal and legal. I say it's unnecessary. What we need is a free market economy, a free society, where the economy is so healthy, the issue of illegal aliens would become a non-issue, because there would be a need for workers in this country. As long as we have this economic condition that encourages people not to work, it encourages illegal immigration and dependency of bringing families here and whatnot, then you're going to have more of it. But if you have a free and healthy economy with sound money, there will be no contention with people coming into this country, and we could be much more generous with our immigration policies. Well known, and Randolph Bourne stated it best when he said that war is the health of the state. When there's a war going on, we the people are supposed to cow down and accept whatever we're told by the government, that in times of emergency you have to sacrifice liberty. Sacrifice 1 ounce of liberty in the preservation, if not 1 ounce of liberty to preserve safety and security. Safety and security is better achieved by free people than slaves. Talk about another war that's an illegal war. It's an intrusion on privacy. It's an excuse to abuse our liberties wholesale, and that is the war on drugs. Now, in a free society, there are always problems, and people get to make choices. Some people will make bad choices, but they have to be responsible for their bad choices. I happen to have a personal belief about drugs. I happen to think they're terribly dangerous. But as a physician, I also have come to the conclusion that prescription drugs are causing a lot more harm in this country than the illegal drugs. And with illegal drugs, the main danger is that of the nonviolent behavior of some individuals who are addicted, and we treat them as criminals instead of sick people. We don't treat alcoholics by putting them all in prison, but if somebody happens to be addicted to a drug, they should receive help. But they can't receive help by turning them into criminals and throwing them in prison. I, as a president, if I had the opportunity, any individual that has been in prison for a nonviolent drug problem ought to be released.
Okay, so you know, he is really getting stronger and honing in on certain areas in his recent speeches. He's speaking of a systematic attack on personal liberties in the last 6 years, and it's pretty strong to say that it's a systematic attack. It's not that it's not just some big mistake, that it's intentional, and I think it's really important to hear that and understand that. He's speaking very consistently about the national ID card and the importance of that, of our country being converted into a fascistic, socialistic state via mechanisms like national ID card and the Patriot Act. And he speaks about free people versus slaves, and basically indicating that in the current state that we're in, we're essentially slaves, and that there's a difference between being a free people and being a slave, one of which is slaves carry around a national ID card, which, by the way, goes into full effect, I believe it's March or May of this year coming, of this coming year. So major, major issue. He talks about the war on drugs. Way back in the 80s when they started that, the war on drugs, I remember people commented that, this is the beginning of them taking away our rights. So they're going to use drugs as an excuse, as they use terrorism today as an excuse for rolling back the constitutional freedoms that are given to us in our Constitution. And he was right then, and he's right now. It's very important to not lose sight of the fact that they use many different mechanisms in order to deny us the inalienable rights that we have in our Constitution. And I think it's really powerful that he says, you know what, if somebody's been put in prison for nonviolent drug offenders, that he would give amnesty to all of those people. I think that's really, really, really great, because he's right. None of those people belong in a prison. They belong in a hospital. They belong getting care and help for their condition. If they haven't committed a violent act and they're just in there for drugs, then they should be released. And so some very powerful stuff there from Ron Paul. And one thing that's just really can't come through to you by playing these, you know, compressed clips over the internet to you is the real electricity that was there. I mean, you hear it somewhere in the crowd, but if you were there, I mean, real electricity. And to see the faces, it was really something else. You're getting a slight sense of it, but it was very powerful. So let's go ahead and go on to the next clip.
Society, and we have enough of that to deal with. Not too long ago, we heard the case of a senator getting into trouble. That always bothered me a bit, because it seems to me like there was a lot of wasted police energy sitting around in a place that seems to be inappropriate for a policeman. But you know, why are those policemen out looking for the rapists and the murderers and the pedophiles and the different people in the country rather than sitting around in toilet stalls? I mean, what have we come to? The government totally in charge of our security at airports. We're supposed to feel safer because they take our toothpaste from us, and they maul us over at the airport and delay things, and we're supposed to feel a lot safer. That's because they're missing the whole point of why we have been in danger. But the principle is personal liberty. It's your life. It's your life to make good use out of it or destroy it. If you make bad choices, you have to suffer the consequences. Economics is the same way. If you want to work hard, get your degrees and be ambitious and get to keep the fruits of your labor, you ought to be able to do it. That is what can get us to achieve the greatest amount of prosperity. Best distributed is under a free market economy. Violation of our personal liberties, and we've had this intrusion of the federal government, especially in our economic affairs, and it has undermined our system, and this today is one of the reasons why people are unhappy. You know, the government tells us there's no inflation. Of course, they quit giving us the numbers to measure inflation, and that's the money supply. They won't even give us those numbers anymore. But the money supply is skyrocketing.
Okay, so he's
happening, which means they're inflating the currency, which means the value of
I think we have some hiccups in the clip, so if it's still there, go ahead and play it through. Yep, keep playing it.
Well, what's the difference if there's 3% inflation rate and everybody's prices go up 3%? It's not the way it happens. What happens is if they inflate, somebody's prices might go up 15% and somebody else might make a lot of profit over the whole deal. So the whole process of the inflation is a very, very bad system. If we want to have a healthy economy, we have to obey the Constitution, and still, under the Constitution, it's never been repealed, is that only gold and silver can be legal tender, not paper money. That those rules were changed 100 years ago, 1913, and since that time we've eliminated 96% of the value of the dollar. It is the tool for big government. It is the tool and the ability for government to grow. Not only did we have the income tax come in 1913, but we had the Federal Reserve come in. So that means it turns over to the government this opportunity to spend money and not be responsible. They can just either collect it by force through taxes, or then they can go to the Federal Reserve. The best approach to that, of course, is not only legalizing gold and silver, but eventually what we need to do is we need to repeal the whole Federal Reserve Act and get rid of the Federal Reserve Act. Or the government they get on a weekly basis, believe me, there would have been a good rebellion a long time ago. So that's one of the reasons, with tongue-in-cheek, I offered the amendment that would repeal wage withholding and have everybody paid by check at the end of the week or the end of the month. Believe me, this would have ended a long time ago. But instead, what they do is they tax us to the maximum, then they borrow to the maximum, and then they print to the maximum. But the debt is coming due, and that's what's happening. That's why the standard of living is going down. Real wages are down. Middle-class people are hurting right now, more so than they want to admit in Washington. They want to say, well, there's no inflation because we don't count energy and food. Well, we're screwed, though, and the inflation rate's not so high. But the free market calculation of inflation on prices is closer to 10%, not to 2%. That's why people are upset and annoyed, and of course I think it's one of the reasons why young people are flocking to the campaign, because at least they have been taught real good arithmetic and they can add it all up. The problems that we've had since we've had the tax system and the Federal Reserve system. They immediately inflated and taxed to fight the First World War. They inflated in the 20s to have a stock market boom, and then they messed it up and gave us the Depression. They inflated for the next war, and it's up and down and over and around and all the problems that we have. But today, conditions are much worse, because even in 1979, when the dollar was threatened, there was a stronger economy here and a stronger manufacturing base. Today, our manufacturing base is gone, and now we're paying the bills, because as the housing market shrinks, all that money borrowed against equities, which are shrinking, is similar in many ways. It might be much bigger than what happened to the NASDAQ bubble. And this time around, the only tool they have is creating new money out of thin air. And there will be a limit. There's going to be a challenge in this very day. The dollar is at historic lows and will probably continue down. The dollar going down means interest rates will go up, the cost of living is going to go up, and our standard of living will go down. That's what we have to contend with. And we cannot contend with it by looking at the tax code and tinkering. We're looking at monetary policy and deciding whether you should raise the rates or lower the rate. The only solution here is sound money and a free market economy. This has been one of the vehicles to finance war. And currently, we are once again doing exactly what we did in the 60s. In the 60s, it was claimed, it's no sweat, American people were prosperous and wealthy. We can have guns, we can have all the prosperity, we can have all the welfare, the government can take care of everybody, and we can have all the guns and the shooting and the killing and lose 60,000 men, it's no big deal, they claim. And yet, the price had to be paid. Matter of fact, the price was paid for in the 1970s, and it was a period of time when it's motivated me to run for politics. It was after the decline and the disintegration of the Bretton Woods Agreement, the breakdown, the last vestige of the gold standard, which prompted me to run for Congress. The 70s were rough. The standard of living went down, inflation skyrocketed, interest rates went to 21%, and the dollar nearly totally collapsed in 79 and 80. Things are worse right now, and we have to understand it, and we have to know what to do. We cannot continue to finance this foreign militarism around the world any longer.
So the theme of this segment was free market economics. And the relationship between that and the situation that we find ourselves in right now. As he mentioned in the course of his speech here, the U.S. dollar is at historic lows. It is threatening to plummet in a drastic devaluation. Could unfold at any time. This is what he's indicating. And this is something that free market economists, Austrian economists, and sound money economists have been anticipating for quite some time. We've been very surprised that they have been able to float this bubble as long as they've been able to float it. But it is possible that this unprecedented historic debt bubble has been popped. And that the final bubble was this big, huge housing bubble in the United States. And now that that has popped, it could be taking the entire financial system down with it. We may be really at the cusp of some very dramatic developments. And this is what Ron Paul is trying to indicate. And the only solution is to get back to free market economics and to stop the Federal Reserve system, to stop the system of simply creating debt to pay the old debt and creating more debt to pay that debt, robbing Peter to pay Paul, or borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, borrowing from Mary to pay Peter, borrowing from Jane to pay Mary. This is how we're doing it. It's a circus act, you know, and eventually all those balls were juggling in the air. Are going to come crashing down, and this is what we're witnessing right now. Interesting that on the day he was giving this speech, the cost of energy and food, they exclude, as he indicated, from the CPI, from the Consumer Price Index, to misestimate, underestimate the actual inflation. Well, the cost of energy and food as measured by crude oil and wheat, probably the two most essential inputs for energy and food, were at all-time highs. Crude oil trading at $80 a barrel and wheat trading at $9 a barrel, simultaneous with his delivery of this speech. So that tells you that we do have inflation, significant inflation, and inflation where it counts in energy and food. And housing, obviously, is at an all-time high. I mean, we've never had to pay this much for real estate. So the very essentials that we rely upon for life are at an all-time high, yet they're trying to tell us that we have 1 or 2% inflation, moderate inflation in this country. Don't think so. Don't think so. Okay? So Ron Paul is the only candidate who's even willing to bring this up. And not only is he willing to bring it up, he's willing to tell us what the solution is, a return to free market economics and a return to gold and silver as legal tender. Get rid of the Federal Reserve and get off the fiat money addiction that we have. Okay, so there it is. Let's go ahead and on to the next clip.
Just the DOD budget, which is separate from the war budget, when you add it all up, it's nearly $1 trillion that we're spending overseas. Let me tell you, we could slash that greatly. 50%, 70%, 20%, who knows what? We could really slash that budget, and it wouldn't hurt our defense posture one bit. Matter of fact, we would be a stronger nation. We would have less threats. We would have a stronger nation. Everybody knows that I was very much on the record many, many years before the war started. The Iraq Liberation Act was passed in 1998. I spoke out strongly then, and the year after year after that, warning about the war that was coming. And now they say to me, when the media asks me a question, they say, yeah, we know you're against it, we know you're there, but what are you going to do about it now? Well, a few weeks ago I gave a talk, and the title of the talk was very simple. We just marched in, we can just march out. Don't we have to stay there and take care of it? I say, yes, we have a moral obligation to the American taxpayer and to the American soldier. Bring them home, stop the killing, and stop the bleeding. This is what the American people are saying and demanding, and they're not getting it. We had a change in the Congress last year, and there are no changes up there. The process has continued. There was an opportunity to insist that the president can't spread this war into Iran without the permission of the Congress, and it was struck from the bill by the leadership on the other side of the aisle. Today, even on this very day, there's even stronger hints that the preparations are currently being made that Iran will soon be bombed by the United States. The most destructive change in foreign policy probably in our history, and we've had some downturns over the years. But right now, we are engaged, since we've gone marched into Iraq, we're engaged in preemptive war. That means we start the war. We declare war. We go in a country not capable of defending themselves, a bad country, the one that can't defend itself, that had not made an attack on us, and they put this in holy terms, like we are doing God's work by going over there. It's foolhardy. And we have to change our way. The founders gave us the answer. Mind our own business and take care of our business here at home. That I'm optimistic, and so many others have gathered that optimism and share it, is that we have been a great country. We have great traditions. We have a great constitution. Not a perfect constitution. There could be and should be some changes. But the important thing about the constitution, we shouldn't ignore it. We should change it only the way we're instructed to change it. Understanding of contract and property rights and individual liberty and religious liberty. We have forgotten that. We have lost our way. We have so little respect for our Constitution. And it's not this administration or this Congress. It's been over many, many decades. It's slowly eroding the respect for liberty. And it's the Congress. It's the executive branch. And it's the legislative branch as well as the judicial branch. They all have so little respect for the rule of law. So if we look to our problem and say, how did we get into this mess? We come up with the idea, well, first, we have economic problems because we don't follow the Constitution on money or on a free market economy. Why are we being so abused on our personal liberties? Because everybody seems to be praying anything the government does, if they're going to make us safer, we're going to sacrifice our liberties. It's that careless attitude and ignoring the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment and the many other amendments. And likewise, we have not followed a foreign policy that is placed in the Constitution, which the founders of told us to follow, and that is to stay out of these affairs. Now, if the answers are there, the solutions aren't that difficult. If we recognize why we're in this mess, all we have to do is put people in office who really believe and understand what the Constitution says, and that you believe will stand up and stand for the Constitution. Yeah! Once we that the people allow the government to assume the responsibility of individuals or of the economy, if it's up to the federal government to make us better people or make the economy more fair or make the world safe for democracy, they can make the attempt. It never works. It's always foolhardy. But the one real evil in this is they can't do any of that without taking away your liberties and taking away your money. That's why it has to be rejected. We were introduced to this fantastic idea of individual liberty. And a lot of people will accuse me of saying, well, you're going back to the Dark Ages. Hardly so. The ideas of liberty are very, very new in the history of the world.
Right.
And it's very new. It was really only well tested in this country. It's this modern, meager testing of liberty, which has been fantastically successful, that we have rejected. And we have rejected. And what we represent now are those who want to revive this and say that we do believe in liberty. We do trust the individual. We don't want to be taken care of by the government. We don't want the government to force our will on other people. And the answers can be found. And the answers are right there. It's much better for us than saying that when the Soviet system collapsed and other countries have revolutions, they don't have our tradition. So there's no reason to be despondent and say, well, it's not worth fighting for because nobody understands it. They do. And that is what's happening in the campaign. There are more people that understand this than I ever dreamed of.
That's right.
Hey.
Wonderful. There were many, many people who were just waiting for the opportunity to stand for these principles, and it's so delightful to see so many new people introduced and the enthusiasm of the young people, because I don't believe true revolutions come about without the young people being involved. Optimistic, but very much knowing and sensing our responsibility. If we do nothing and we sit back and say, oh yeah, it'll work out because America's good and great and we have good laws in our books and we'll finally get some people up there that are going to do it. Won't happen. Won't happen. But I'll tell you what, if they hear our voice, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Civil liberties have been violated, but we still live in a great country. We still can have rallies like this. Sometimes we have to work at it, but we still can have...
Okay. So a lot of territory got covered in that segment of the talk. And I'm just going to go ahead and leave that without comment. Certainly, the congressman is speaking very strongly. I noticed somewhat of a shift, somewhat of a change since the last debate when he mixed it up with the other candidates. We're hearing him really speaking from deep down. I don't want to use the word forcefully. Strongly, I guess, is just the right word. I wouldn't call it forcefully. I would just say he's speaking with strength and conviction. And it's really coming up. And I think that the presence of this crowd of, I would say, it was a minimum crowd of 1,000 supporters. And there's reports saying 500 are entirely erroneous. There's absolutely no way there were only 500 people there. There were at least 1,000, if not more. On the high end, 1,500, but probably on the lower end towards 1,100 or 1,200. A minimum of 1,000 people there. Quite a crowd. Quite a crowd. So I believe we have Eric from Florida on the line. Eric Overholtz, are you there?
I'm here. This is Eric.
Hey, Eric. How are you today? Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks.
Good. So were you able to listen into the stream yesterday?
Yesterday I was not. What happened yesterday now?
Ron Paul, you were just listening to Ron Paul in Los Angeles. That's where I live, and I did a live webcast of the entire 3 hours of Ron Paul in Los Angeles from there. So, good. What can we do for you today?
Well, just wanted to call and say that things are going pretty good down here. We're in Fort Lauderdale, We're revving up for a debate next Monday night here in Fort Lauderdale. It's a presidential debate.
Okay. Oh, great. And all right. Next Monday night.
Next Monday night.
Okay. And let's see, who's hosting that debate? What channel?
Well, I do know it's going to be at the Broward Performing Arts Center. I'm not sure exactly which media outlet is going to be showing it, but I think it's being sponsored by the Center for Reclaiming America. And what I find really interesting is that I've been told that that Giuliani and Romney have decided not to come because of their very sketchy pro-life records,
mm-hmm.
you know, or rather lack thereof. And I just got to be thinking, you know, what does that say about their leadership ability? If you're going to be in office in a democracy, whether you're Ron Paul or anyone, you're going to have to deal with adversarial and differing opinions. And you know, what does that say about their leadership abilities if they're not able to at least discuss their views with a will probably be a predominantly pro-life crowd?
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good point. Very good point. Well, it does seem like they kind of pick and choose their battles. They don't seem to want to show up at certain straw polls where they stand a pretty good chance of losing as well. Iowa being a good example.
Right.
So, you know, I think that it takes a man of character to be out there engaging in every battle. And that would be Ron Paul. You know, he doesn't shirk from any of the straw polls or from any of the debates. He's ready and willing to go head on at any time because he stands behind his freedom message.
Oh, I totally agree. I watched him in the New Hampshire debates, and I just thought that he made Chris Wallace look so foolish.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, when he suggested that President Paul would take his marching orders from Al Qaeda.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean that's fine. You know, like they say, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they attack you, and then you win. You know, so if they're attacking
exactly.
us, that means we're one step closer to winning. So attack away.
Yeah.
Ron Paul can handle it. And he can certainly take any attack, and like a good martial artist, use that and turn it back on his opponent, and we see that all the time. So
absolutely,
yep. So
yeah, I definitely see the snowballing effect down here. I mean, you know, I see that Ron Paul's support base is definitely snowballing.
Do you know what time this debate is taking place in?
I think it is at 7:00, but I'm not positive on that. It is on Monday night.
Okay, so if it was 7:00 Monday night, that would be on Pacific time. That would be 4 p.m.
Like
Pacific time. That would be right in the middle of my show, which is great.
Okay.
Which is great, which means what I'm going to ask you to do for me, Eric, you're planning on going down to where they're having the debate, right?
Yes.
Are you planning on going inside the debate, or are you going to be outside in front?
Yes. They are supposed to have some free tickets coming to me. They didn't, you know, I haven't received word today from the person supposed to get it, but I'll certainly get it tomorrow.
Okay. So I go live at 3:30. A half hour before that would be scheduled to begin. So what I need you to do is, if it's not going to be you, I'd like to have somebody there that's on the scene reporting to me live what's going on, you know, so by cell phone they call into the show and they can give us a live report. And if there's a bunch of Ron Paul supporters out front, which of course there would, like if there's a bunch of Ron Paul supporters out front, silly me, of course.
If there will be.
I think we could pretty much be guaranteed of that. You know,
yeah.
So you can sort of pass the phone around to all the supporters and we can get their feelings and thoughts about what's going on and sort of get a little live caller from live from the scene. Do you think we could hook that up?
I'll certainly do my best.
All right, good.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will be fun. It'll.
And I just want to let you know too that I've got probably within 2 weeks I'll have my album done, and it's called The Freedom Message.
Is that right?
Yeah, I sent you that track a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, and I thank you very much. You sent me that piece as an intro for my show, right?
Right.
Yeah, yes, and I've played it a couple of times. We've had some technical difficulties here a few times, so I have played it, and I appreciate that very much. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to open the show with it tomorrow. And,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, Steve Dorr wrote me something as well, so I opened the show today with that. I will be opening the show. Well, that's great that you're calling the entire album The Freedom Message. That's awesome.
Yeah, of course I'm going to throw that track on there, and I'm going to that previous piece, you know, the exercise your free will, the info piece for Ron Paul, and I have a really neat piece that's coming out too. It's a twist on Johnny Come Marching Home, I title it When Does Johnny Come Marching Home?
Well, certainly send me anything that you got. You know, I always love to play what you got. And
you're
telling me now that we've gone a little bit over time, so we do have to wrap it up. So,
Well, listen, best of luck on your trip.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, I always love to get your calls. Call in anytime. And let's keep in touch with regards to Monday and see what we can arrange.
Will do.
All right. Thanks so much, sir. You have a good day. All right. So you've been listening to The Freedom Message with Steve and Vincent. And I'm going to go ahead and sign off. We have another show coming in, and we have to wrap it up now. So listen in again tomorrow, and it's going to be exciting. We're going to have some reports from San Francisco and from Seattle, where Ron Paul is visiting. So again, thanks very much for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Just the DOD budget, which is separate from the war budget, when you add it all up, it's nearly $1 trillion that we're spending overseas.
Woo!
Let me tell you, we could slash that greatly. 50%, 70%, who knows what? We could really slash that budget.